first shot, no good. Liam with the chance to tie the game on this free throw. And he does it. Tied at 38. A little over 4 minutes left to go in the fourth. Dillingham's going to have a wide out on the wing. Riley's going to get the steal. Going to pass it off to Brennan. To Liam. Hands it off to Riley. Riley for three, short. Brennan will get the rebound. He's going to pass it off to Riley. Hands it off to Chase. Chase for three gets blocked, and that'll be a foul. And Chase will be shooting three. Ooh, sound like it hit his head pretty hard.
Let's go, Keegan. Let's go, Keegan. Let's go, Keegan.
First shot is good. King Cove now in the lead. Second shot is good. Chase with the opportunity to make the T-Jacks a 3-point lead. And he does. 3.5 left to go in the fourth. They're going to pass it down low. And out to the 3-point line. Back out. Drives. Chase is going to get the steal. Chase for three. Hits the back rim. Gets his own rebound. Saves it from going out of bounds. But Tillingham's going to pick it up off the ground. They go swinging along the 3-point line. Dillingham's going to throw the ball out of bounds, and it'll be King Cove's ball. Liam's going to have it at half court. He's going to put it up for two, no good. Dillingham's going to get the rebound. He's going to try putting it up for two, and it's good. Dillingham now only up by one. Liam's going to have it. He's going to drive up for two, short. Saylor will get the rebound. Put back, no good. Dillingham will get the board. Dillingham now in possession. Dillingham calls a timeout. 2 minutes left to go in the fourth. Dillingham at 40, King Cove 41. Dillingham's going to have the ball at the end of the timeout. Dillingham puts up a three, no good. Going to get the rebound. I'm going to pass it back out up top, reset the offense. Passing it down low. They're going to drive. Passing it out, up for three again, and it's good. A minute and a half left to go on this fourth. Riley's going to pass it off to Chase. I mean, Liam. Back to Riley. Saylor. Liam. Running up top. Brennan's going to pass it to Chase. Chase going to pass it down to Liam, to Brennan. Brennan's going to drive, picks up his dribble, pass it off to Liam. To Chase. Chase is going to drive, passing it out to Saylor. Saylor for two, no good. Dillingham's going to get the rebound. A little under a minute left to go on the floor. Put the pressure. That'll be Brennan's fifth foul. He's going to be fouled out. Desmond's going to come in for him. Dillingham's going to have the ball. Seconds. They just need to get a steal and put up a layup. Saylor's gonna foul. 20 seconds left. Chase is gonna foul. 16 seconds. Gonna have it on the other side of the court. Riley's gonna foul. 14 seconds. I'm gonna inbound near half court. I'm gonna hold the ball. Riley fouls again. 9 seconds. Gonna be shooting two. King Cove already down by two. Makes the first one. Second one is short. Liam's gonna get the rebound. And Chase is gonna call a timeout for the T-Jacks. 7 seconds left in the fourth quarter. Dillingham up by three, 44 to 41. Seconds left. Chase is going to bring the ball down. Let's see if he could get a shot off for a three. No good. And that'll be the end of the game. T-Jack Jags lost by 3. The T-Jags 41, Dillingham Varsity 44. Broadcast and play-by-play brought to you by KSDP. Thank you for tuning in.
All right, tough loss for the King Cove T-Jacks. I was really hoping for a Sandpoint for Eagles T-Jack championship game tomorrow, but we will have King Cove play at 1:30 now. Wait, that's the boys bracket. Yes, Sandpoint or King Cove will move there, and that game will be at 1:30. We'll have that for you. Point breakdown, Brennan with 12, Chase with 10, Riley with 6, Sailor with 6, and Liam with 7. We'll be back with Lady Eagles at 7:30.
Referring to the Puerto Rican community in Philadelphia, which is the community of my childhood. And what she reminded me was we knew so many women who had left their children. But the reason I hadn't clocked it and the reason it was kind of invisible or hidden in plain sight is because other women took over the labor of raising those children. An auntie, an abuela, a cousin, an older sister. In one case, we thought of a father who stayed when the mother took off. So I had really thought of it as kind of a fantasy in some ways when I wrote it. And here was my mom actually pointing out to me, no, this reflects the reality you grew up in.
Why was rage the emotion for April? Why was rage the white hot?
I think it's not an emotion I have such healthy and direct access to. And so I wanted to explore that through a fictional character. You know, what is anger? What purpose does it serve in our lives? It's mostly been the province of men in popular culture and in cultural narratives. You know, what is an angry woman? And is there a way that anger can be productive, actually, in addition to its destructive components? And one of the things we discover in April's story is that as a child, she witnessed a pretty traumatic act of violence. Now, those of us who are familiar with PTSD know that when faced with, you know, something that triggers that memory, it's fight or flight, it's freeze or fawn. And so I wanted to write this character who fought. She didn't fight when she witnessed this violent act. Instead, she got into schoolyard fights, you know, mm-hmm. on the playground. And she became a really good fighter. And that got her into a lot of trouble. And really, the book is about her transforming this kind of raw elemental energy that she's been overly easily tapped into, which is her rage, transforming its power into a different source and release in her life by the end of her 10-day journey in this book.
Mm-hmm. So much of your work keeps returning to Philadelphia, which we're going to talk about. But your origin goes back even further to Puerto Rico, your grandmother's journey to this country. She took her own quest. She took her hero's journey to come to Philadelphia. What did you grow up knowing about that journey?
It was neat growing up in Philadelphia and hearing my elder stories from Puerto Rico, where they came from. My abuela came with her daughters in tow. So my mom was 12 years old when they all arrived in Philadelphia. Now, they originated in Arecibo, Puerto Rico, which is a coastal town, and they were farmers. And there's varying points of view on why they left. Everyone has a slightly different story. It's quite a Rashomon sort of narrative. Maybe they left because there had been a kind of infidelity from her partner. Maybe they left because my eldest aunt needed better health care than was available to treat a condition she was facing. The thing I loved about hearing these stories is they were wholly, wholly, wholly unlike the world that was familiar to me. I didn't step foot in Puerto Rico till I was 9. So up until the age of 9, I had to just imagine, what is a mountain in Puerto Rico? What is a farm in Puerto Rico? What is it to sleep under mosquito netting every night? What is it to feel your first refrigerated drink, you know, when you're 5 years old because you've only had warm, fresh cow's milk, like you don't have a refrigerator? So these were real stories that to me felt like fables or imagined lands. And I think I had to leave Philadelphia to write my community stories because I kind of only know how to tell the story in hindsight when you've already left it. That's how I grew up hearing them. So that's kind of how I tell them now.
Philadelphia is such a strong character in your work. You've set plays there. Your memoir, of course, is there. And now this novel. Of course, it is your hometown. So, of course, there's this inherent inclination to rep it. But what is it about the city in particular that almost makes it at times a very central character in so much of your work?
The thing that really turned me on about living in Philadelphia growing up was this simultaneous disconnect and overlap between the fact that it is a mythological part of American history, and also it's just a very real place where very real people live. And so I would get excited walking. I was kind of like a rebellious teen. I would be wearing like my heavy motorcycle boots, walking around downtown with my notebook writing poems. And in the historic part of downtown, there's cobblestones, and they're kind of these blue, shiny, eroded cobblestones. And sometimes they'd have to dig them up. The city would dig them up and find unmarked graves beneath them, find pottery remnants and shards from American Indian groups, would find kitchens that had, that revealed through their clues the history of slave labor, even in Philadelphia. And so here you are, you're walking over 10 feet below your boots, layers, centuries of Philadelphia history. And all that history is layered on top of an extensive stream network that got kind of paved over. So there's layers and layers and layers of geologic history, colonial history. And then I'm walking north on Fifth Street, and when you cross Girard Avenue, at least in my childhood, it was almost this invisible wall, like, boom. You're in a different part of town now. This is called El Barrio. This is where the Puerto Ricans live. An invisible border. And you could feel them. It's like a little air pressure change. And I found that segregation, which I was very hip to as a kid, you can see it plainly, it kind of had some silver linings and it had some real problems to it. For me, the silver lining was that it created this kind of closed ecosystem and incubator of brilliant culture. So you go into North Philly and the dancing is the best you're going to find in Philadelphia. The music is blasted and it's some of the best music the Americas have produced. This is golden age salsa. Play me a kind of music that with more sophistication and joy weaves together our nation's history. It doesn't exist. Like, this to me is pinnacle music, mountaintop music. So this kind of cultural innovation. Also, I found on the blocks in North Philly, there was a savviness about body diversity that really countered the popular culture, okay? When I grew up, it was like heroin chic. Kate Moss, all these supermodels are very skinny. Anorexia and bulimia almost becomes a fad. And here I step into North Philly, and women are showing their curves. They're not covering up their curves. Like, bike shorts and a tank top is an outfit where someone's belly can spill out and they're showing it. And so I savored the cultural treasures that this segregated community was able to develop. By the same token, there was terrible municipal services. There was very little trash pickup. There was blight, extreme blight, where there were blocks and blocks of abandoned lots where it just was scary to walk down them. It's like, there's no witnesses if I scream here, you know? So this is Philadelphia to me. It's a long answer, but it was an incredible place to have a local culture and also feel that in relief against our kind of national historical mythology.
And in the midst of all of that, as every teenager does, you're trying to figure out who you are. Your parents weren't together for most of your childhood. And you write about this in your memoir. I mean, like many kids of separated parents, you shuttled between two worlds, which you've said created an identity that wasn't just a bifurcation. It was like a, I think you described it as a quadrification. Is that even a word? A quadrification?
You know, the feeling I remember is there's so many identities, and oftentimes they're directly at odds with each other. And so really it's those friction points that become my identity. Do I fit squarely in the Puerto Rican community? Do I fit squarely in the white community that my biological father was part of, even though he left when I was fairly young, and now I'm with my mom and my Puerto Rican stepfather? You know, where do I belong? Well, I kind of belonged, maybe this is why I remember that border of Girard Avenue so well, because that border between spaces is what I felt like the most. And I often did feel like a migrant in my own life. I was always traveling between places, traveling between languages. Like, you know, my Spanish is kind of embarrassing, and my English kind of separates me. English as my first language separates me from a lot of my closest family members, let alone the spiritual languages, the musical languages. And so, yeah, it was those friction points that made me feel kind of alive. And now I know as a writer, that's what I'm always digging into. You know, where are the moments where the dichotomy is the reality and is the truth?
Let's take a short break. If you're just joining us, my guest is Pulitzer Prize winning playwright Chiara Alegría Hudes. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air.
Hi, this is Molly C.V. Nesper, digital producer at Fresh Air.
And this is Terry Gross, host of the show.
One of the things I do is write the weekly newsletter.
And I'm a newsletter fan. I read it every Saturday after breakfast. The newsletter includes all the week's shows, staff recommendations, and Molly picks timely highlights from the archive. It's a fun read.
It's also the only place where we tell you what's coming up next week, an exclusive.
So subscribe at whyy.org/freshair and look for an email from Molly every Saturday morning.
I want to know more about your mom's spirituality. She was a high priestess in the Afro-Cuban Lukumi tradition. What does that mean? What did it look like?
So this was something really beautiful. As I mentioned, my mother, she was born into spiritual gifts, and she sees the world through very different eyes than I have. She could see spirits when she was a child, and it scared her. She didn't understand it a lot of the time. It marked her as different in her community. And it came with this, with senses of responsibility too. You know, she used to see, oh, so-and-so came to me and said, I'm dying. And then they would rush to that elder's house, and this elder had died in their sleep. So she saw a few deaths before they occurred. And then they started coming to her asking for her insight. And it's more than a child could shoulder. So for many years, she kind of tamped down her spiritual proclivities because they scared her. But one of the great experiences of my life, really starting in middle school, was she had always told me about her spiritual life and her spiritual gifts. But she really started opening the door to serious and rigorous study when I was maybe in about middle school. She started studying Lukumi, which her older sisters also participated in. It was popularly known as Santeria at the time. I kind of shy away from that terminology because it was just used in such ugly ways in my youth, really almost as a slur or as an othering sort of word. Mm-hmm. So I used Lukumi, which Lukumi does not have those same connotations. It looked like mom doing ceremony in our living room. There aren't churches. This is a living room practice. She would have scholars, and by scholars, I mean priests. This is a very intellectual practice. You have to study deep history to gain seniority and respect in the religion. They would grate coconut and put it on my kneecaps, and I would sit there and meditate for an hour as that cleansing spirit entered me, and they prayed over my head. They would make me a bath of flower petals and different herbal remedies, cascarilla, which is like powdered eggshell, to open my pathways, to help me not be depressed. I was depressed as a kid. They would chant in Yoruba. They would chant in Spanish in my living room with the bata drums. It was a very culturally awe-inspiring experience. My living room was often the site of sacred practice. It was super cool.
Kiara, you studied music composition at Yale, not playwriting. You were going to be a composer. What happened?
I stayed a composer. My instrument is now words. I'm not practicing for hours alone at the piano every day. Instead, I'm practicing storytelling in my mind and on pieces of paper every day. So I have studied dramatic structure since my musical studies ended, but I actually think those musical studies are more informative for how I structure a long-form narrative and also how I kind of think about writing at the sentence level. I love music. I love the cadence of words, and it's just sentences are the funnest place to play in service of a larger story.
You and Lin-Manuel Miranda have been collaborators for now, it's been about two decades now. So In the Heights, Vivo, that is really a particular kind of trust. It's like handing the emotional architecture to someone else, and it's a mix of the story and the music. How did you two learn to build together?
I can see now that one of the things that weaves through the pieces I've done with Lin is we're very playful. They're joyous works. They're effervescent works. You know, In the Heights is probably the happiest thing I've ever written, followed closely by Vivo. And we just get that kind of playful side out of each other. It's a little bit more natural to him. He's a very upbeat and optimistic person. I definitely have a dark, broody side that comes out in pieces like The White Hot. So it's really about just being like, you know, you remember when you were a kid and you'd have a friend and you'd just be like, hey, you want to come over and play? That's it. Like, that's the basic relationship that we have when working. You want to come over and play? And what are we working on today? You know, I had this idea. I wrote this scene, but maybe it will be better as a song. Check it out, Lin. And an hour later, he's like, I've got a hook for it. I remember working on the animated movie Vivo together. And I had this idea for a new character who ended up becoming quite central to the movie. She was just on the periphery at first. And this is the character of Gabby. And she's a wild child. She's always a volume 10. She's always the loudest one in the room. She unapologetically takes up space. And Vivo is a very kind of uptight type A musician. He wants to practice his scales and he wants them to not have a note mistake in them. Okay, Gabby does not care about the note mistake. And so we're talking about this character. How do we weave her in? And I was like, you know, she needs a song. I think she's going to, let's give her a big crazy song. And he's sitting there on the floor and he's going, And this is how I know we've worked together for long enough. I'm like, he's already got a hook in his head. And a few minutes later, he's jotted down or thumbed these words into his notes app in his phone. Own drum, ho hum. And I'm giving him some more language. Well, here's a monologue, she might say, about taking the school bus home. You know, a whole big monologue. He takes three syllables from that and it becomes, I get my own seat on the bus. So it's really like a hacky sack game. Come over and play and let's do hacky sack. And what we're going to keep in the air is the ideas, the word, the energy of a scene.
Let's hear an excerpt from that song, My Own Drum, from the soundtrack of the 2021 animated film, Vivo.
I'd rather be current team will be instrumental. Instrumental, ha! See what I did there? I made a pun, ha! I'm having fun, ha! I'm never done, ha! I'm just a one young woman, blah, 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 my best.
That's Yanara Lee Simo singing My Own Drum by Lin-Manuel Miranda from the animated
film. Okay, I think
we
have Rivera back.
My guest, Kiara Alegría.
For some more basketball.
Co-wrote
Sandpoint Ladies, Eagles.
She also wrote the book for
Up Against the Bristol Bay Angels. Winner of this will go into the championship game tomorrow.
Her most recent project.
Get the tip. Shar's gonna have it, passing to Precious up top. Then to Misty. The Precious. Precious drives. Passing out to Shar. To Misty on the wing. Gonna pass it out to Precious. Precious for three. No good. Bristol Bay will get the rebound. We're gonna have it at the wing. She's gonna dribble up top. I'm gonna put it up for two and it's good. East Sandpoint ball. Shot to Precious. Precious to Mia, the high post. To Whitney. Whitney for three, and it's good. Oh, no, long two, sorry. I put up a shot, no good. It'll be out of bounds on Charlotte on the rebound. They're gonna have it at the wing. She's gonna drive, loses the ball. Mia picks it up off the ground. Passing it to Shar. And then to Brooks gonna pick it up off the ground for Bristol Bay. Precious fighting for the ball on the ground. That'll be a jump. Bristol Bay inbound half court. Misty's gonna get the steal. She's gonna put it up for two and it's good. She's gonna pass it a high post. Drives up for two, short. Mia will get the rebound to go out of bounds on Bristol Bay. It'll be Sandpoint ball. Little under 6 minutes left to go. Sandpoint up by 2, 4-2. Charlotte to Misty. Misty's gonna drive. She's gonna put it up for two, and it's good. Have it in the corner, it'll be out of bounds on her foot, and it'll be a Sandpoint ball. Whitney passing it right to Brooke Phelps on Bristol Bay. Live up for three, no good. Put back, no good. Gets the offensive rebound. And it'll be out of bounds off the rebound. Her foot will go out of bounds and it will be Sandpoint ball. Char is going to get trapped. Passing it right to Bristol Bay. Misty's going to take it back. Miss you to Whitney. Hands it out to Char. To Whitney. To Precious. Precious for three. No good. Bristol Bay will get the rebound. They're going to have it up at the wing. Passing it down low, up for two, and it's good. That'll be a timeout for the Eagles. Lady Eagles. Lady Eagles up by two, 6-4. 3 minutes, 53 left to go in the first.
I could have been a little louder. I thought I had been loud enough, and I hadn't been. I tried, and at moments I failed. By the same token, part of me as a writer anticipated that casting this movie is going to be hard.
Oh.
And so I can see in my screenplay I was already guarding myself against certain things happening. So I wrote in to Nina's dialogue in my screenplay for In the Heights, I was worried that it would be cast as all light-skinned actors. And so I was like, let me make sure that part of what Nina's experiencing is some anti-blackness. So I actually wrote that into the dialogue because I didn't contractually have say.
It'll be standpoint ball at the end of the timeout. Fire me up. Mia's going to have it wide out on the wing, passing up to Char up top. Precious on the wing. To Whitney and Mia. Mia's going to drive, passing it off to Whitney. To Precious. Precious is going to drive. Passing out to Char. To Precious. Whitney. And then to Misty. Passing it to Charlotte. To Precious on the wing, then Amia at high post. Gonna put it up, gets blocked. Gonna go out of bounds on the block. It'll be standpoint ball on their side baseline. Missy's gonna have it on the corner, dribbles up to the wing. Passing it to Mia down low, then to Whitney. Whitney for three, no good. Bristol Bay will get the rebound. Precious stealing the ball, losing it to Brooke. And that'll be a travel on Bristol Bay. And who called that timeout, Bristol Bay?
I don't know.
Oh, there'll be a timeout.
Oh, that was you sitting.
Bristol Bay at 4 and Lady Eagles at 6. 2 minutes, 39 left to go in the first. Charlotte's gonna pass it to Mia. Mia to Misty. Charlotte on the wing. Charlotte's gonna drive, passing it out to Mia. Mia up for two, no good. And that'll be out of bounds on the rebound. It'll be standpoint ball inbounding their side baseline. Whitney's gonna have it on the wing. She's gonna drive up for two. No good. Bristol Bay will get the rebound. Oh, They're going to have it at the wing. Going to pass it down low. Going to put it up for two, short. Neil will get the rebound, passing it to Shard. Shard and Mia. Precious, Precious for three, and it's good. Sound point at nine, Bristol Bay four. A minute and a half left to go in the first. Bristol Bay with possession. Bristol Bay drives, passing it down low, up for two, no good. Whitney will get the rebound, passing it to Mia. Mia puts it up for two, and it's good, and one. Oh, never mind. That'll be an offensive foul. Bristol Bay with possession. Chris is gonna get the steal. She's gonna put it up for two. No good. Heavy off the backboard. Mia, put back in. It's good. Bristol Bay is gonna have the ball. I'm gonna pass it out to the 3-point line. Drives. Have it on the wing. Have it down low. Puts it up for two, and it's good. Char's gonna pass it to Precious. Precious to Mia. The Shar. Shar's gonna put it up for two, and it's good. Up for the buzzer, no good. It'll be sound point ball at the beginning of the second quarter. Sound point at 13, Bristol Bay at 6.
Thank you, Vera. 13-7 in favor of the Lady Eagles. I have Whitney for two, Misty for four, Precious for three, Mia for two, and Charlotte for two. We'll be back with Rivera when she gets back to us.
The city itself seems to be suffering from a series of absence seizures, a lingering post-World War II malaise, and dampening of appetite that could also be ascribed to the stifling power of the Catholic Church. The past, as it does in all noirs, returns here in the form of a storyline from previous Quirk novels about the Magdalene laundries run by the church, where fallen women were sent to work, often against their will. And Quirk, long tormented by the mystery of his own origins, finally achieves a limited
It'll be sound point ball.
Oh no, you can't hurt me, dude.
Whitney's gonna bring it down. Passing it to Precious. To Mia. Mia passing it down to Misty, and that'll be a travel on Mia. It'll be Bristol Bay ball. Hello. They're gonna have it up at the wing to up top. Hands it off to her teammate. Drives up for two. And that'll be a travel. It'll be sound point ball. Whitney's gonna have it. Gonna put it up for two, no good. Go out of bounds on the shot. And it'll be Bristol Bay ball. Still possession. Passing it to the wing. And it'll be deflected out of bounds by Whitney. You're not in it. You're not even close to being in it. Up for three, and it's good. For Bristol Bay, and Sandpoint will have the ball. Charlotte's gonna have it on the wing. And that'll be an offensive foul on Sandpoint. Bristol Bay is going to have it on the wing. She's going to drive, passing it back out to the wing. Sending it down low. Charlotte's going to get the steal. Passing it to Precious. Precious for three. No good. Bristol Bay will get the rebound off the shot. 5.5 left to go in the second. Sandpoint gets the steal. Passing it to Whitney. Hands it off to Precious. Hands it back off to Whitney. Whitney for three, short. Mia with the save. Charlotte with the save. Bristol Bay is going to grab it. They're going to put it up for two, short. And that'll be out of bounds on Misty. And it'll be Bristol Bay on their side baseline. Passing it out in the corner. Going to put it up for two, in and out. Gets her own rebound, puts it up for three, no good. Back up for three, and that'll be a foul, and she'll be sent to the line shooting three free throws.
I hit the right hand.
Stop it. That
was not me.
First shot's no good. Second shot's good. And that'll be a line violation on Sandpoint. Second shot's good. Or third shot, I guess. It'll be Sandpoint ball. Whitney's gonna have it up top. Passing it to Misty. Misty draws, passing it to Bristol Bay, but it'll be out of bounds and it will be Sandpoint ball on their side baseline. 4.5 left to go in the second. Whitney's gonna have it in the corner. Misty for a long two, no good. Bristol Bay will get the rebound. Mia's gonna foul on the shot, and Bristol Bay should be shooting two. First shot is good. Second shot, no good. Crystal Bay gets the rebound, puts it back up for two, no good. And it'll be out of bounds on the rebound from Bristol Bay, and it'll be sound point ball. Whitney to Precious. Precious will lose the ball out of bounds, and it'll be Bristol Bay ball. Sound point at 13, Bristol Bay at 12. I'm gonna pass it down low. And Whitney's gonna get the deflection off the pass and be out of bounds, and it'll be Bristol Bay ball on their side of the court, baseline. Puts it up for two, no good. And that'll be a jump ball between Whitney and Bristol Bay. Live for three, and it's good. That'll bring Bristol Bay up to two, with a lead up to two. 15 to 13. Sound point now in possession. 3 minutes left to go in the second. Missy's gonna have it at high post. She's gonna put it up for two, short. Bristol Bay will get the rebound. Passing it up top. And then up for a three, and it's good. Sound point will have the ball. Sound point's gonna have the ball. And Bristol Bay's gonna get the deflection off the pass. And they will now have possession. They're gonna have it up top. Passing it up for three, gets blocked by Misty. Bristol Bay still possession. Precious gonna get the steal. She's gonna pass it to Mia. Bristol Bay with the steal back. Bristol Bay now up by five, 18 to 13. Minute and a half left to go in the second. Bristol Bay still in possession. She's gonna drive, puts it up for two, no good. And that'll be out of bounds on Charlotte, and it'll still remain Bristol Bay ball. And they're gonna inbound their side baseline. They're gonna put it up for two, blocked by Mia. Putback is good. Bristol Bay is gonna get the steal, passing it right back to Precious. I mean, Charlotte. Misty. Passing it to Whitney at the wing. Back to Char. Char for three. No good. And that'll be a jump ball. And it'll go to sound point. They'll inbound their side on the baseline. That'll be out of bounds on Bristol Bay on the steal attempt. Passing it to Precious in the corner. 45 seconds. Bristol Bay gets the steal and that'll be out of bounds. Sandpoint's gonna inbound half court. Seconds in the second. Mia's gonna have it at high post. Passing it to Misty up top. Misty to Whitney. Whitney to Precious. Back to Whitney. Whitney for three, and it's good. That brings Sandpoint to 16. 5 seconds left. Bristol Bay 20. Puts it up for a three. No good. Misty will get the rebound, and that'll be the end of the first half. Sandpoint at 16 and Bristol Bay at 20. We'll be back in 10 minutes for the second half.
Okay, thank you, Rivera. We'll be back with Rivera when she gets back to us. We made love by the ocean. As the waves crashed around you. Sunsets never were so bright. And the skies never so blue. You opened up into my arms. And we laughed as I held you. I'll never go back to Georgia. Not at least till I